Thanks for waking up with WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center is our fabulous producer. We'll go ahead and place another producer on the list here, Scott Gilbert, who works at Penn State College of Medicine as one of their fabulous outreach people, taking great care of reporters and all other people who need information from the medical center. So thank you, Scott, former program director here at WKOK. And that's why we have the privilege of talking to a man who insists we call him Danny. Daniel George is here. He's Dr. Daniel George, an associate professor of humanities and public health sciences at Penn State College of Medicine. Thank you, sir. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
Well, we're going to talk about your research into diseases of despair. I just really think that this is a critically important subject that you're studying that I think really goes to the heart of, probably we keep talking about root causes about this and that around here, and I think here it is. Diseases of despair, define that clinically for our audience.
Sure. So these are particular types of deaths from suicide, overdose, and alcoholism. And they were discovered over the last 20 years by two Princeton economists who saw that mortality rates were rising, largely for poor white rural men and women with low educational attainment over the past two decades. And it's largely driven by those three types of death that I mentioned.
Well, someone may just in a casual flip response say, well, these are individuals who are living the life they wish to, and why is this an issue for a great researcher at Penn State to just keep digging and taking?
Right. I think cultural explanations for things of this magnitude just don't hold up so well. And in fact, these deaths correlate pretty well with, you know, the passage of free trade deals and NAFTA, which tended to gut largely small towns and small regions with manufacturing and mining bases. So we outsourced tens of millions of jobs and really left in the lurch a lot of people who may have lacked the college education for a service and knowledge economy. And those folks have really, really struggled over the past several decades. And of course, into that environment have flowed opioids from the Sackler family and from others. And it's been a real toxic and tragic situation.
Well, I just see irony here. Here we are. We're in modern times. You know, we're supposedly enjoying great progress in many areas, but this harkens back to why somebody might refer to the good old days when maybe we didn't have a lot of the stressors and the opioid prevalence was significantly lower or non-existent. Social media was non-existent. Would we be better off somehow isolating ourselves back to what someone might call the good old days?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept. And you think about like the mid-20th century, and you could have a single earner household, and people had a living wage, and they had benefits, and we had a stronger social safety net. People just felt a little more secure. We had strong unions, so people were more secure in their jobs. People went to union halls. People were more participating in social organizations, religious institutions, things of that nature. And essentially, the economic transition that we've had over the past several decades has really, really degraded our community life and our sense of connection to other people and a sense that the future is getting better. You know, there's been wage stagnation for the last 40 years for working class folks. So the sense that, you know, we live in the greatest country on earth and things are always getting better has sort of been challenged by, you know, what's happened over the last few decades. And I think there is some wisdom in thinking about what was it about the good old days, as you say, and how can we sort of recapitulate that moving forward.
Why is this why are people content now not enjoying contact with their neighbor? Why is most folks might just tell you, well, I wish to be left alone. Why is that? Well, why is that bad? Maybe that's just the new normal. Maybe that's how we were really meant to be all along.
Yeah, that's a depressing thought, isn't it? We're social animals, and we rely on other people. And, you know, one message I want to send out there is that everybody's life matters, everybody belongs, and we need to do a better job of reaching out to people who may be alienated and who may be isolated because there's a lot of deepening alienation right now and people just not feeling a part of anything larger than themselves. And that all, of course, is downstream from the economic changes that have happened here. You know, it's harder to make a living now. People don't feel pride in what they do as much as they used to. As you say, social media has been a real damaging, toxic effect in terms of people withdrawing from one another. So anything that we can do to mitigate the alienation and disconnection people feel is going to at least somewhat help this problem.
So social media friends don't count. I don't know how many I have, but, you know, as a radio reporter, I probably have 1,000 friends per se, but they don't raise me up the same way my good acquaintance buddies could.
I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, there are no replacement for embodied, thick social bonds that we have. You know, in the research that we did here, people talked about how social media sort of resulted in this feeling of being alone together. So you are with these hundreds or thousands of people in your network online, but that's sort of an abstraction, and people are managing their identities in ways that can be illusory or make you feel inferior, or that your life is not amounting to what other people's lives are. So, you know, in retrospect, I think we'll look back on this era and look at the mental health and psychological burden that it imposed on all of us, for sure.
What can we do if Dr. George is asked to impose some policy or rule, or will we even make it King George so you can really control wide swaths of the planet? What can we do to claw back or just to improve these situations?
Well, thank you for making me the Viceroy of Central Pennsylvania. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
No, based on what we learned in our research from talking to people on the ground in high prevalence communities of despair, illness, you know, people talk at two levels. They talk about the local level. We need to get back to churches, nonprofits, building relationships, peer support, ride sharing to jobs, things of that nature, and just basically building a sense of community again, which has been so lost in this era. But you mentioned policies, and I think, you know, obviously this will be politically contentious, but, you know, I think we need to think about how do we make life good and materially secure and dignified for the working class again. And that means providing living wage jobs for people, providing secure benefits for people, providing mental health and health care for folks to stave off some of the dislocation and disconnection and alienation we were talking about, you know, making sure people aren't in crippling debt, having more people as part of unions will provide more security for workers. I think there are a lot of things that we can do, but essentially it all boils down to the question of how do we create a landscape where people have a guarantee of a good job, a good wage, a decent living, a home, and kind of economic protection in sickness and old age. So any policies that can help us achieve greater security and dignity for the working class, I think, is the way we need to go.
We're talking about diseases of despair with Dr. George Daniel, a PhD associate professor of humanities and public health sciences at Penn State College of Medicine. Mental health issues, substance abuse, financial instability in Pennsylvania, lack of infrastructure, family fragmentation, deteriorating sense of community and financial instability, contributing to these diseases of despair that I just mentioned. Are we doing anything that would lead to progress in, you know, if we've identified sort of what a healthier society might look like? Are we doing anything that leads to that, or are we still stable or the decline?
Yeah, I'm afraid, you know, in talking to people on the ground, too, they echoed this sentiment that, you know, our political culture right now is just stagnant, and both parties just seem incapable of doing anything to help the working class. There's a real sense that our political process has been captured by the elite, by moneyed interest, by the upper class, and that there's really nobody looking out for working class folks anymore. And so people were very nihilistic, I'd say, about the likelihood of our both state and federal politicians doing anything to help us. And you know, I don't want to perhaps co-sign on that, but I do share that concern, and I think we need to do some real soul searching about why can't our politics respond to a crisis of this magnitude where we have over 160,000 people dying deaths of despair every year, and it's almost assuredly going to be more with COVID? That is a culture that is not healthy. That's a culture that is stagnant and decadent, and we really need to figure out how we break through the stasis of this era and try to help the working class.
What will Penn State, or can Penn State College of Medicine, do to address this? You almost need, like, support groups. You know, I joined a support group. What's it support? Well, anybody who's alive today, or, you know, something like that, or lives in our society. You know, what's the Penn State strategy? What might that look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's the one thing that we can control external politics. And, you know, one thing that we can do is do a better job of screening for despair and for people who have predilections towards suicidality and drug and alcohol addiction, and getting them the help that they need. And that may mean, you know, going beyond our hospital system and partnering with community organizations, as you say, community groups and support groups, and getting people who are very high risk into those helpful networks where they can get reinforcement and support and those sort of protective bonds that we were talking about earlier. And you know, one thing that we're going to try to do is use big data to try to look at algorithms in our intake and try to see if we can identify folks who are at higher risk based not just on their clinical information but also where they're living and the risk factors that are in the communities themselves. So we're going to try to do all that we can. This is a major problem in Appalachia and, of course, in our region. So we're going to absolutely be proactive in trying to help however we can.
Is it a global issue?
You know, that's a great question. It is a national issue in the U.S. You don't see this in other countries, although there's starting to be an uptick in places like Canada, the U.K., and Australia. I would say those countries have stronger social safety nets, and so, you know, the economic transitions that have happened there with globalization have been, you know, mitigated somewhat by that. The fact that everybody has access to health care and mental health care being a big part of it. But, you know, the United States is particularly affected. This hasn't become global yet, per se, but I think the more that we have an economic transition where you see outsourcing of jobs and roboticization and automation of jobs, you're going to see deaths of despair follow in the wake of that. So if we don't act decisively, which again I'm not sure we can do at this point in our politics, but if we don't act decisively, we're going to see these same patterns playing out.
Well, please keep in touch as we talk about this. I do hope when we speak again, we'll be talking about some molecular increment of progress towards some of the solutions you identified, and you know, maybe change what seems to be relatively normal activities around here. Dr. George, thank you so much. Or Danny, thank you so much for your time. We will talk again, I guarantee it. Thank you.
Thank you for your interest in this topic, Mark. It's great talking to you.
Daniel George, PhD, Associate Professor of Humanities and Public Health Sciences, Penn State College of Medicine. Lots more information about this. Diseases of despair, meaning mental health issues, substance abuse, and financial instability, particularly as it relates to Pennsylvania, but globally, as you heard. And you can read more about some of the strategies at PennStateHealthNews.org.